Good morning, everyone. We are recording this session, so it'll be good if everybody switches off their mobile phone.
I lost my charge.
So last week I wasn't here. What did you do? Where did you go?
Slept in.
That was nice. Larry did an introduction how the process was. Was active, that gas was going in light, and then he started reading of 692 because it's so in our IRQ, the world is true until it's on eternity, because that is something, the essence, no? The whole process. No?
Yes.
So, and then he was reading all the parts, so we can go now in detail.
You read the rest.
We didn't discuss anything.
Up to page 697. The end of the canto. Okay, wonderful.
Yes.
Wonderful. Okay. So we can go back to page 693 and line 801. 693 is the page and line 801. It's interesting, she was asking the Lord, I claim thee for the world that thou hast made. And if human beings are bound, are limited by their humanity, and if they're tied to ever, forever to their imperfection and their pain, then please let a greater being arise from man. Otherwise, this whole creation of yours would be in vain, and this great world would be just what death has been telling her that it is, no? A nothing that in time's moments seems to be. But she says, but I know it's not like that. I have seen through this material mask of things. I felt the secret spirit stir in things, that secret spirit that is carrying the body of the growing God. That secret spirit looks through all these veiling forms and appearances. It looks through and sees the veilless truth behind, which is supporting all this. That spirit is pushing back this curtain of the gods, and this secret spirit is climbing towards its own eternity. That's the evolutionary presence of the divine in the manifestation and in humanity. So thanks, Larry, for taking charge last week. Everybody was appreciating. So we'll go on from page 801. Line 81 on page 693. Sorry. Will you start, Margaret?
But the God answered to the woman's heart, O living power of the incarnate world, all that the spirit has dreamed, thou canst create, thou art the force by which I made the worlds, thou art my vision, and my will and voice, but knowledge too is thine, the world plain thou knowest, and the tardy process of the pace of time. In the impetuous drive of thy heart of flame, in thy passion to deliver men and earth, indigent at the impediments of time, and the slow evolution's sluggard steps, lead not the spirit in an ignorant world to dare too soon the adventure of the light, pushing the bound and slumbering God in man, awakened with ineffable silences into endless vistas of the unknown and unseen, across the last confines of the limiting mind and the superconscious perilous borderline into the danger of the infinite.
Thank you. So this is an important turning point where this Godhead acknowledges to Savitri who she really is. He says, you are a living power of the incarnate Word, the Word of creation, the great creative force which has originated all this manifestation. All that the Spirit has dreamed, thou canst create. You have the power. You are the creative Word. You can create whatever the Spirit has dreamed. You are the force by which I have made the worlds. You are my vision and my will and my voice.
He's separating the two, Spirit and I. Still.
I think they are not really different. But this is, he's embodied, he's individualized, the Godhead.
So, this incarnate word with capital W, does it mean the pranava, the first word, which is Om? No?
Of course, Om is the sound expression, the vibratory expression of that word. But I think we get this word with a capital W. It appears in many places in the poem, and it says if it's the it's the word of command by which the creation comes into existence. And that is the Divine Mother, the Supreme Divine Mother. She is the force by which the worlds have been made. It's the word of creation. So in the tradition, Savitri is one of the names of the Shakti of Brahma, the creator, no? The other name is Gayatri. That's also a word, no? Creative word. So it's something like that. Does that answer your question? No? Don.
I don't know if it's similar or has a meaning, but it appears to in the Bible, in the beginning, was the word.
Yes. Yes.
Could you elaborate that?
Could I elaborate that? No. No, it is in one of the Gospels, St. John's Gospel, written in Greek. And he begins that Gospel by saying that in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God. And so on, and that word for him he expressed is embodied in Christ, the Avatar. So it's this, the whole universe, the whole manifestation that we live in, this whole creation could not have come into existence unless it had been formulated as a word of power, which started off the manifestation. In I think that when St. John wrote that, he was thinking about the beginning of the Old Testament, where the Lord says, let there be light, and there was light, and then he says, let there be all the other things, all come into existence. So this is what is meant, and the Greek word is logos, word. So I think this is the word with the capital W. And Savitri is embodying that word. He says, you are a living power of the incarnate word. So naturally, you can, all, what does he say? All that the Spirit has dreamed, thou canst create. And you are my vision, and my will, and my voice. So he's giving her this absolute power, no, to achieve what she's set her will on. But now he's going to qualify it a little bit. He says, but you also have knowledge. It's not only you have the creative power, you have the knowledge, and you know the whole plan for the world, and you know why this tardy process of the pace of time, why this has been chosen, that things should unfold gradually in time. So he says, I know you have this impetuous drive with your passionate heart of flame, and I know that you are passionately wishing to deliver man and earth. But he says, don't be too indignant about the impediments of time, that it's taking too long. Don't be too indignant about that, the way that evolution is proceeding with these slow, sluggard steps. Mother has spoken about this, that somehow there's something in the omnipresent reality that is telling her, don't be too impatient. You're in too much of a hurry to push things forward. No. So he's expressing that here. No.
In our present life also, suppose somebody gets some intuition or some revelation, and maybe that could be the wonderful world or wonderful situation. But sometimes also with our own limitations, we get impatient.
Yes, of course.
We should learn how to be patient. Isn't it the inspiration from
you? Yes, we have to learn how to be patient and impatient at the same time. That's what's difficult for us human beings, no? Mother says, don't give up your ideals. Cling to them. But please recognize that in order for them to be fulfilled, the whole universe has to change, and so that takes time.
Somewhere I read, in fact, the book from the All India magazine, Time, you mentioned, in there, it said that Sri Aurobindo has, I don't know if you can sense it as the idea of the way things really are, but is this universe? Well, it didn't quite meet the standard that the Lord had set. Away with this universe, another universe, another universe, another universe. I'll try to show off some quotation here. In other words, this universe will be out to a point, but it may not be able to fit, evidently according to Sri Aurobindo, maybe able to fit what the Lord wants, and so let's try another universe. Let's try another universe.
There may be something like that. But anyway, here what he's saying is the spirit in this ignorant world of humanity as it is now. And you must remember that this story is supposed to be taking place right at the beginning of human history, far back in the past. Savitri's father, Ashwapati, is described as the first human being who had the secret knowledge. So way before the Vedic rishis, back at the beginning. No? So then the Lord, at that time, the Lord is telling her, the spirit in the world at the moment is ignorant. Don't be in too much of a hurry to lead it too soon to the adventure of the light. You'd be pushing this bound, sleeping God in man, this God that hasn't yet woken up in the human species. If you wake him up now, in the midst of all these ineffable silences of eternity and infinity, into the endless vistas of the unknown and the unseen, you push him across the last confines of the limiting mind, and even beyond the perilous border line of the superconscient, into the danger of the infinite. So all these things have to be worked out in evolution before it will be time for this liberation of earth and man that you are pressing for now. That's what he tells her.
We'll see later how she responds.
Yeah, and we'll see later how she responds. Yeah. But it's very similar to what the Supreme Mother told Ashwapati, no? The world is not ready. Wait. In its time, the time will come. Have faith. Don't be impatient. Let it take its necessary time. But then he immediately says something else. Patricia.
But if thou wilt not wait for time and God, do then thy work and force thy will on fate. As I have taken from thee my load of night, and taken from thee my twilight's doubts and dreams, so now I take my light of utter day. These are my symbol kingdoms, but not here can the great choice be made that fixes fate, or uttered the sanction of the voice supreme, arise upon a ladder of greater worlds to the infinity where no world can be, but not in the wide air where greater life uplifts its mystery and its miracle, and not on the luminous peaks of summit mind, or in the hold where subtle matter's spirit hides in its light of shimmering secrecy, can there be heard the eternal's firm command that joins the head of destiny to its base. These only are the mediating links. Not theirs is the originating sight, nor the fulfilling act, or last support that bears perpetually the cosmic pile.
Thank you. So he tells her, if you're not willing to wait for time and for God to do his work in his own time, then go ahead, do your work, force your will on fate. He's giving her permission to do that. And he's going to help her. He says, as I've taken away from you my load of night, eternal night, he made her pass through that, no? And he made her pass through the double twilight. He says, I've taken that away from you, my twilight's doubts and dreams. So now I'm going to take away this world that we're in now, this light of utter day. We are in the realm of everlasting day. He says, these are just my symbol kingdoms. And he says, here you can't make the great choice that fixes fate, that influences the destiny of the world. And here the sanction, the agreement of the Supreme to your choice cannot be uttered here in these symbol kingdoms. Instead, you're going to have to go much further. Arise upon a ladder of greater worlds to the infinity where no world can be. In order to make this choice and to receive the sanction of the Supreme, Savitri is going to have to go beyond the manifestation into the transcendent realm. And this ladder of greater worlds, this is the worlds that are greater than our material human world. He mentions three of them. The greater life, not in the wide air, where a greater life uplifts its mystery and its miracle. And not on the summits of mind, the luminous peaks of mind. That's not high enough. And not in the hold, in the secret place where the spirit of subtle matter hides in its light of shimmering secrecies. At the beginning of Book 2, Canto 2, there's such a wonderful description of this world of subtle matter, which carries the templates for everything that happens or is manifested here. But in none of those places can there be heard the Eternal's firm command that joins the head of destiny to its base, that joins the transcendent and the material. These greater worlds are only, and these symbol worlds are only mediating links in the chain. No? They don't have the originating sight, that original vision that said yes. No? And they don't have the fulfilling act, the power to do the final act. And they are not even the last support that's bearing forever the cosmic pile, this great mountain of many levels of existence. That's supported on something. It's not supported on any of these intermediate worlds. And he's going to explain more about that. Is it clear? Anybody would like to ask anything?
What do you mean by symbol kingdoms?
Yes, these don't correspond to anything. At least this is how I understand it. Yeah. That these are symbolic worlds that he has created to face Savitri in her journey. They may not have any permanent universal reality. They are symbol worlds, they can be accessed psychologically, but they don't belong to this series of planes of existence which Asvapati explored. That's how I see it. Jocelyn, would you read on?
Two are the powers that all the ends of time. Spirit forces, matter unfolding force. The ground is preserved, God is decreasing. Only till no eyes are and no doubt. Agent, unquestioning, inconscient, stark, evolving inevitably a charged content. Intentional force in time and space, in animate beings and inanimate things, immutably it fulfills its ordered tasks, it cancels no particular things done, unserving and overworking, it alters not the steps of the unseen. If thou must indeed deliver man and earth on the spiritual heights, look down on life, discover the proof of God and man and world, then leave thy path, knowing and seeing all. Ascend, soul, into thy timeless self, choose destiny's curve, and stand thy will on time.
Thank you. This would be the command of the Eternal saying yes to Savitri's choice. So he's telling her in these worlds of the manifestation, you can't really make your choice. And the Eternal won't give his firm command, saying that what you choose will be. For that, you have to go into this higher level. You have to ascend into thy timeless self, yourself beyond time, on the transcendent level. It's from there that the command must come, that something can change, that Satyavan can return to earth, that earth and man can be delivered. Yeah. So he explains that there are two powers that are holding the ends of time. The spirit foresees what should happen, and matter unfolds gradually the thoughts of the Spirit. And there's this wonderful description of what matter is and does. What is the mission of matter? Matter is the dumb executor of God's decrees. The Spirit foresees what must happen, the word of command is given, and that gets carried out by matter. Very, very scrupulously, without leaving out any iota and no dot. Iota is the smallest letter in the Greek alphabet. And a dot, no? So, of course, if everything is being written out, nothing must be missed out, not even the smallest little letter, not even the dot. And iota goes with tittle. We say no jot or tittle, nothing must be admitted. So matter is an unquestioning agent. It's absolutely obedient. It does exactly what it has to do, although it is inconscient. And it's stark. It doesn't put any frills or anything on it. It does just exactly what has to be done, in a way relentlessly, you can say. It's inevitably evolving, gradually unfolding a charged content. It contains all those that decree of the Lord, charged with the energy that they should be fulfilled. So inevitably all that is being evolved. That charged content is the intention of God's force in time and space. And that gets worked out in animate beings, living beings, and inanimate things, material objects. Matter is immutably fulfilling its ordered task without cancelling a tittle, not a tiny littlest bit, of what has been done. It has been done. It doesn't move even a little bit, unswerving. Swerving is when you move aside. The dog runs across your path, you have to swerve on your bike to avoid it. But this, the matter doesn't swerve, it doesn't move aside at all as it is fulfilling the command. It's been the oracular command from above. It doesn't alter at all the steps of the unseen. So that's how it is with matter. If you want to change things in the material world, you are going to have to go to the Spirit and get your wish granted there, and only then it can be acted out in matter.
That means to bring any change in our will situation, we have to go to the Spirit.
The higher we go, the better it will be. But there are things within our that are within our capacity, and we can change things within ourselves. That's where really we have to do our work. But what Savitri is wanting to change is the law of ignorance and death, and not just for herself, but for the whole of humanity. So that's a huge change that can only be made with the consent, the sanction of the Supreme. So whatever wish, and she's done work so bravely and valiantly, she has done her work and passed through all the challenges. So now he's telling her, if you really want to go ahead, this is the way you will have to go. Beyond the manifestation, ascend, O soul, into thy timeless self. There choose the curve that destiny will take in the future for the whole universe, and stamp thy will on time. He's even encouraging her to do it.
Savitri knows all these things. Why do you ask?
Perhaps we can see it as a kind of permission. an encouragement. It's not opposing her anymore. That's why I said it's a turning point. When finally she's reached a point where instead of being obstructed, she's just first warned, but then told, look, go into your timeless self. From there, see how things are in the world and decide whether you really want to change it. We'll go on. Yes, Helmut?
He ended, and upon the falling sound, a power went forth, it shook the fine spheres, and loosed the stakes that hold the tents of form, absorbed from vision's grip, and the folds of thought wrapped in her sense like disappearing seeds in the stupendous theater of space. The heaven worlds vanished in spiritual light. A movement was abroad, a cry, a word, beginningless in its vast discovery, momentless in its unthinkable return. Quiet in calm seas, she heard the returning thought, visioning itself abroad unutterably in spaceless orbits and in timeless worlds. In an ineffable world, she lived fulfilled.
Thank you. So it's interesting that Savitri herself doesn't have to do anything. She doesn't move, no? Just this power went forth and everything dissolves. It's as if all forms, everything in the manifestation is just a kind of tent and the poles have been removed. So it all just collapses.
Temporary construction.
It's like that, yes. I suppose our manifestation is indeed a temporary construction. But I don't think it's that the whole material universe is dissolved. It's dissolved for her. She's put into a state in which it all doesn't exist anymore. All is removed from her vision. As if all these things have just been taken away from her senses, no? Like disappearing scenes in the stupendous theater of space. All the scenery's been moved away. All the heaven worlds, they just vanish in light, in spiritual light. And she hears something. Yes, Don?
Go back quite a bit there. If this is the Lord, I don't know what to represent. How to call this personage that's talking now to Savitri and so on. Why did he appear as death and seemingly doubt Savitri's abilities, which he's now admitting and saying, you know, from now on, here on, and so on there? Why did death go through all these steps until finally it seems he wrecked you? Didn't he know from the beginning who she is, even when he was death?
Of course, the Lord must have known all along. Yeah. But this is part of the necessary process, no? When she was just an ordinary human being, like he says, in these worlds, in the worlds of the manifestation.
Well, we
discussed it before. It was as if he was challenging or testing the realizations that she'd had in her subjective yoga. How does this stand up to the objective reality of the world as it is?
Maybe to make her stronger.
It seems to be, can we say, revealing her strength. Perhaps that strength was there all the time, but through this series of tests, and of course we can say from the artist's point of view, he has to show the obstacles that have to be overcome, and how she's able to overcome them.
That's satisfying.
Well, you know, it makes me think of the legend in kind of a bare bones way, where you're describing King Aswapati as the premier rishi. And then you have this
this unfolding of the universe and this unfolding of all of our history of creation. And now we find ourselves in this reality where we are right now, of our, where this legend can then become a symbol of where we're at right now.
Mm.
We are not getting out of anything. We're really face to face with all of those layers that we've had, that we followed Savitri through.
True. Yeah.
And we're still in the midst. We haven't quite made it as far as she had, but, you know.
Yes. So this is a guidebook.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So it all disappears, but there is something moving. A movement was abroad, a cry, a word. There's a word that is beginningless in its vast discovery, momentless in its unthinkable return. Perhaps when we think about the transcendent state, about eternity and infinity, we think of it as something empty. But the mother has said, it's not empty at all. It's packed with limitless possibility. So perhaps that's what's being hinted at here, that when all the appearances of the manifestation, not only the material world, but all the subtle worlds, when all that is removed and Savitri finds herself in this ineffable realm, she's aware of something dynamic, a movement, a cry, a word, which is beginningless and momentless. It doesn't have a beginning. It's not divided up like time is dissolved, is divided. And it's as if that whole transcendent infinity and eternity is singing. She says, he says, choired in calm seas, she heard the eternal thought rhythming itself abroad, unutterably, in spaceless orbits and on timeless roads. Perhaps this is the Om. Yes, Tera. It doesn't mean in a foreign country. It means spread out. Yes. And he said, on the heights of the spirit, on spiritual heights, look down on life. So now he's removed all the appearances, symbolic, subtle, material. So now she's living and she feels fulfilled in this ineffable world, a world that can't be described or expressed in words. Yes, ma'am.
But to me, she says orbits and rhythming.
Yes.
So what I see is a world like that.
Yes, this is the problem, as if it had a borderline. This is our mind.
Mm.
This is a world with no borderline, and these orbits are spaceless, and these roads are not roads in time.
But it could be energy that was going.
Yes,
and
of course.
It could not be bordered then.
Yes, exactly. That's right. This is spiritual energy.
Yeah.
Not the kind of energy that we know.
Right.
Not material energy. Mm-hmm. Not even material light energy. But spiritual energy. That's what it is. Yes, it's dynamic and it's creative, absolutely creative. Yeah. So we need to go on from there, Manoha.
An energy of the triune infinite. measureless reality, the rupture and the being and the force, a linked and myriad motion with plenitude, a virgin unity, a luminous pose, housing a multitudinous embrace, to marry all in God's immense delight, bearing the eternity of every spirit, bearing the burden of universal love. A wonderful mother of unnumbered souls, all things she knew, all things imagined or willed. Her ear was opened to ideal sound, shaped the convention bound no more on her side. 1,000 doors of oneness was her heart.
Thank you. So this is Savitri's self-experience in that transcendent state. She feels herself to be an energy of the triune infinite, the infinite Satchitananda, existence, consciousness, bliss. That is infinite. She is one energy, one expression of that triune infinite. And she feels herself dwelling, inhabiting this measureless reality with a capital R, a really real reality. She feels herself as a rapture and a being and a force. These are a rapture, the bliss, a being, an existence, and a force, the energy. Satchitananda, energy, existence, conscious force, bliss. At the same time, she feels herself as a linked and myriad motioned plenitude, a great fullness containing many connected things, moving things, all the possibilities of her timeless self. She feels herself as a virgin unity, unity, oneness, alone, pure, no? But at the same time as a luminous spouse. She is the bride of the Supreme. No? And in her, she is housing, she's carrying it in her, a multitudinous embrace that can embrace everything, that can bring everything together, marry everything, bring it all together in God's immense delight. She's bearing in herself the eternity of every spirit. She's bearing the burden of universal love. She experiences herself as a wonderful mother of unnumbered souls. She's carrying all the souls within herself.
Why is universal love a burden?
Because if you're really experiencing universal love, you have to experience also all the suffering of all the beings that you love in the universe, all their effort and toil. So it's a burden that's borne gladly with delight out of love, but it's still a burden.
Maybe the wish to change into the divine love.
All its imperfections, She knew all things, she's aware of all things, not only all things that are already manifested, but even all things that are imagined and willed. And her hearing is opened, it's aware to ideal sound, to those kind of thought conceptions that express themselves in sound on the ideal level. Shape the convention bound no more her sight. We see things as shapes, no? But he says that that's just a convention. It's only one way that of seeing things. If we would see the infinitesimals dance that's going on of all these subatomic particles in everything, no, we wouldn't see these limiting shapes at all. It's a convention and an agreement that's valid for now, that helps us to live and experience now. So, but that's all gone for Savitri. No? And her heart is just a thousand doors of oneness. And it's not just 1,000, it's billions of doors by which she's connected with everything possible and manifested and unmanifested.
Do you mind? Because I got caught in 868 with this it's unthinkable return.
Yes. What? No, this is a very, very mysterious sentence.
I cannot get off from that.
A movement was abroad. It was moving around in that space of spiritual light. And that movement is beginningless. It's moving around, and as it's moving around, it's discovering things endlessly, vastly, but it does come back again. But that return is not in time, and it can't be thought, can't be grasped by the mind at all. This is a transcendent state which our minds cannot grasp.
When Anandi give you a question and after your answer, coming in my mind was that in 1962, Mother tell to Sartre, I come back after 50 years, 2012, after cycle, first it came around here and after come back. But for me, it's in the matter, in the physical body. Some aspects of depends on the receptivity of the being. It's my inner experience also, little, but in our body. When I put, for example, in the news, presence, spiritual presence, I have experience, not now, but 3 years ago in the presence, in the physical, never before, and is amplified, depends your work. But is both, but is very, very simple.
Sorry, but now she say about 62, I remember that, you know, Sartem was pushing Mother to publish the agenda, and Mother always said, no, and one day he was going on in December 62, and she said, you don't want. And she said, I didn't say no now. It's going to happen in 50 years, we'll be ready. And it was 2012, and I was very shocked because all the Mayas and all the story of the New World starting was 50 years later. You know? And at the time I said, well, she says, not an accident, 50 years more. I was really shocked at that moment because after when 2012 came, I said, it's just 50 years later. We're more ready, but yeah.
Shall we go a little further?
Please.
You want to read, Anandi?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
A crypt and sanctuary.
A crypt and sanctuary of living light appeared. The last recess of things beyond. Then, in its rounds, the enormous field post, silent gave back the knowable. All it had given still was her listening heart. The form of things had ceased within her soul, invisible that perhaps God had now.
That perfect.
Sorry?
Invisible that perfect.
Invisible that perfect Godhead now. Around her, some tremendous spirit lived, mysterious flame around, emerging pearl. And in the phantom of abolished space, There was a voice that heard, but ears that cry. Choose thy supreme choice, not given you again. For now from high, highest being looks at thee, a nameless, formless peace, where all things rest.
Thank you. So Savitri is in that state which we read about, and something happens, something appears, a crypt and sanctuary of brooding light. Crypt, it's a very, very suggestive word. In a cathedral, in a Christian cathedral, or it's probably the same in, for example, Taj Mahal and so on, there's a space in the foundations where the most significant sign of that place is kept. In a cathedral, it's usually relics of the saint. Crypt suggests it's something hidden, mysterious, something that's cryptic, is something that's difficult to understand or grasp. But it's a sacred space, a hidden sacred space. So that's what opens up now. It appears. It's also a sanctuary, a safe place. The holiest place in a temple is the sanctuary. This is a crypt and a sanctuary that are formed out of light, brooding light, light that may give birth to something, out of which something may emerge. No? And he says this crypt and sanctuary of brooding light is the last recess of things beyond. A recess is usually a small space of a bigger room or of a bigger space. No? It's something out of the way. It may be covered with curtains or something. So she's seen so many things beyond, but now this is the most secret place that's being revealed to her, the last recess of things beyond. And when that appears, then this movement and this cry, this eternal thought, it stops, it pauses in its rounds. In its rounds, the enormous fiat, the creative word of command, it is paused. There's a complete silence. Silence gave back to the unknowable everything that the unknowable has given, everything that's come out of the unknowable to enable the creation to happen. So Savitri is just listening attentively. Still was her listening thought. The form of things had ceased within her soul. She's not aware of any forms, and that Godhead is now invisible. She can't see him. Instead, she feels around her some tremendous spirit. That tremendous spirit is like flame somehow, mysterious flame. And in the heart of that mysterious flame is little Savitri, like a pearl that's being dissolved. And in the phantom of abolished space, in that space around her that no longer exists, there's a voice. It's not a voice that is heard by the ears, but it's a voice that is heard, and it tells her, choose, spirit. Now is the time when you can choose. You can give your supreme choice that will be final. You won't have another chance to change it. This will be the final choice. Because you can do that now, because from my highest being. This Godhead also has a highest aspect, a transcendent aspect, no? That is looking at thee, the nameless, formless peace where all things rest, the ultimate peace. Now you can choose.
When he says, my highest being looks at thee, and formless, nameless peace, it doesn't appear as it is death.
No, he's not death anymore. He's the Supreme Lord, eternal life. And the peace that he's giving is not the peace of death, it's the peace of utter fulfillment.
For me, it's he looks at thee, the norm is that Savitri is the nameless, formless peace.
No. She is thee, the being, the Supreme Lord says to her, My highest being, I'm looking at you. What is looking at you is my nameless, formless peace where all things rest.
Sure, when we go back to that crypt word, to me that evokes other images of a death cave and of a burial place, or, you know, the crypt where Jesus' body was put for 3 days, or the crypt where they buried bodies. But in this context, you didn't really mention any of that. Is it?
Well, I only think that it's a secret place, a hidden place, in which something is kept that is extremely sacred. So that may be the bones of a saint or something like that. Yeah.
In his confused with his poison in the country, Drishtipat.
Yes. What, which?
By divine.
Being seen by the divine.
Drishti path. Path means coming down. And drishti is vision. So this is drishti path.
The word crypt?
Drishti path.
What is the English word? Crypt? No, here. Oh, here, what? My nameless, formless peace is looking at you. Yes.
Crypt has two.
So I want to say, it's 11:45 now, that with these lines, around her some tremendous spirit lived, mysterious flame around a melting pearl. This is the beginning of Mother's long 37-minute reading. She reads all the next pages up to Built is the Golden Tower, the flame child born. I think it would be nice if next week we would listen to that. Amazingly powerful reading. Otherwise we just have little snippets of her reading, no? But we will hear some now.
So we would hear the mother read from this point to the final end?
To page... to this first part of the Supreme's long speech. It's on page 702, line 1124. O word, cry out the immortal litany. Built is the golden tower, the flame child born. And Uddha tells us that this is the mantra which will transform the world. So be nice to hear Mother reading all these beautiful lines.
Perfect, because Jesus was born on that day.
Oh, it's Christmas Day, yes.
Christmas Day, wow.
I wonder if next week, or sometime in this reading, if you could, or someone who's familiar with Sanskrit, could talk about the word fate and its relationship to the word path, and how Shravan has found, Savitri has found, knows herself and her work. I mean, that's irrelevant.
It's not irrelevant, but...
but sometimes...
Yeah, Let's see. Remind again. Yes. Uda, when he came once here, before we had any buildings, it was in our Keet hut there. He spoke about many things from Savitri. He's one of the people who has learned the whole poem off by heart, and he recited certain passages to us. But very significantly, he told us about an interaction with the mother in which she had told him that Savitri is a mantra for the transformation of the world. And then he spoke especially about this passage which the mother reads, this 37 minutes, and especially these last three lines or four lines, I think three lines of on page 702, lines 1121, 1122, 1123. He said, this is the mantra. Yes, that's what mother reads, and that is just what we read today. Around her some tremendous spirit lived. That's where mother starts. Mysterious flame around a melting pearl. And she reads to 1123. Yes,
I have a question about the text to be read today.
Yes.
It's about the line, the form of things has ceased within her soul.
Yes.
And my question is, in the line, can you tell anything about why Sri Aurobindo is talking about reality, that she isn't a reality?
Yes. There's no form, but it's an stupendous reality, huh? Yes. A measureless reality.
Yeah, that's...
A reality which contains the potentiality of form, but also can be formless. So I think this is the omnipresent reality which he speaks about in The Life Divine, which is inhabiting and supporting all this. You know, the Godhead told her that about this fulfilling act and last support, you know, that bears perpetually the cosmic pile. What is that support? It's that measureless reality of spirit. Otherwise, none of all this could exist. But now Savitri is experiencing that reality, unlimited by and undefined by any forms. It's just its pure essential self. It expresses itself now with a voice, and it offers her, now is the time to make your choice, to stamp your will on time. Is that clear, Tom?
Yes. It stays particular for me to use the word reality, but it's a capital
R. Yeah, capital R, yes.
I understand what you're saying.
Yes. That's what's truly real. In a, yes, what we experience as reality is only very relatively real, no? But that's the absolute reality.
Not a feigned reality.
No.
The real one.
So you have some lines from Mother?
We started reading. Six lines.
But the God answered to the woman's heart, O living power of the incarnate world, arise upon a ladder of greater worlds to the infinity where no world can be. Ascend, O soul. that stand thy wind on time. In an ineffable world, she lived fulfilled, an energy of the triune infinity. In a measureless reality, she dwelt. Around her, some tremendous spirit lived. Mysterious flows around a melting pearl. And in the phantom of abolished space, there was a voice unheard by ears that cried, "Choose, Spirit, thy supreme choice, not given again. Accept all music weariness of thy notes, O stream, wide breaking of thy channel bank." And silently the woman's heart replied, "Thy peace, O Lord, a boon within thee, amid the roar and din of wild time for the magnificent soul of man on earth."